edition of World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C., and we are descending ever deeper into a world economic depression of unimaginable proportions. It is the Bush derivatives world economic depression, so far, soon to become the Bush derivatives Obama world economic depression, and we've got to talk about this. Now, the big event this week, though, surviving the cataclysm, your guide to the worst financial crisis in human history. The second edition is now available, and I would invite everyone to get a copy as soon as possible. You can now order this from progressivepress.com. That is to say, www.progressivepress.com, and you will find there a link to click on with an order form. The book is $19.95 plus modest postage, and what you get is the electronic text immediately and the printed text within 4 to 6 weeks at the most, when the printed text then becomes available. And this, I say, it is the most prophetic book on the current world economic depression. The principal and analytical or historical chapters were done in 1998 to 1999, and they talk about the descent into depression because of deindustrialization, mainly visited on us by the Paul Adolf Volcker regime of the Federal Reserve System, plus the decline of the U.S. standard of living by approximately two-thirds already to the middle of the 1990s, one-half to two-thirds at that time, and getting worse in the meantime. Then the question of derivatives madness, the toxic, deadly securities, as President Chirac of France said, financial aids, that's derivatives. Now, the whole economy is being run to perpetuate financial aids, or the financial time bomb, that they, as they've variously been called, the derivatives. And we're going to talk about derivatives today quite heavily. But let me recommend to you an urgent guide. This is also a book that tells you what to do. If you if you've been following various libertarian investment advisors out there, right, if you've been following the various Austrian schools of investment advice, you probably haven't done too well. If you followed the advice in surviving the cataclysm, you did just fine, because you were not invested in paper of certainly not stock market paper. You were invested primarily in physical gold and in U.S. Treasury securities, including Treasury inflation-protected securities that give you a hedge against inflation. So you get the benefits of a bond with the inflation protection that takes away the main disadvantage of most bonds. This is a book that also contains a program for world economic recovery, and that is the most valuable form of knowledge in the world right now. How do you fight a depression? How do you get out of a depression? Naturally, our Austrians say there is no way. You've simply got to let fate work its destiny on you. Well, that is an abominable, pessimistic doctrine, typical of this noxious foreign belief system, so-called Austrian school, Chicago school, narco-anarcho-capitalism, as it's been called, and thoroughly un-American. American thinking would be fight the depression and defeat it, outflank it, break it up, and send it packing. That's the method embraced by surviving the cataclysm. So you have a right to survive, and above all, the world has a right to survive. And with the approach outlined here, based on production, the American system of physical economy, we can fight our way out. So I'll be referring several times during the show to surviving the cataclysm. But now let's get into the these events. Over the last 2 weeks, we've gotten a pretty good idea of the Obama corporate state, Obamanomics, and it's not pretty. Let me call your attention, before we say anything else, to the tremendous disparity between payments to banks and payments to individuals. And it's this disparity that allows us to say Obama is not the New Deal. Obama is the anti-New Deal. He's not the new Franklin Roosevelt. He's the antithesis of Franklin Roosevelt. He tries to wrap himself, of course, in the cloak of Lincoln, of Roosevelt, of Kennedy, whoever he can get. He's a desperate demagogue attempting to cover up what he really represents. Now, generally speaking, during the Paulson-Geithner era, that is to say the late Bush to early Obama era, but remember, Obama was the main cheerleader for most of these things, and he is a banker's boy, and he even made a speech to tell us what a banker's boy he is. We'll get to that in just a minute. The TARP, the bailout from September, October, and now a probable third round coming forward to the tune of $750 billion. That's just Treasury money, $1.5 trillion approximately for the banks. But if we add that to the $8 trillion or so coming from the Federal Reserve, we will see that what Obama presides over, and this policy is seamless from Paulson Bush to Geithner Obama, with Volcker and Summers concurring therein, it is a payment of $10 trillion to the banks, which stands against maybe, if we're lucky, $200 billion, maybe $250 billion. We'll do the arithmetic in the coming days. For people, in other words, the desirable elements of the Obama stimulus package were things like $40 billion to extend emergency unemployment benefits. Very good thing. Should be multiplied by 5 to 10. $18 billion for child support. In other words, a reinstatement of some form of welfare assistance to mothers with dependent children, so you don't get a bunch of people who are ripe for the human scrap heap. We wouldn't want that, would we? Health insurance assistance to the unemployed. Very good thing. $20 billion in Barkey's stimulus for food stamps, the SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Various payments to states for education budgets and so forth. If you're lucky, that gets up to $200 to $250 billion at the most. So that's a quarter of a trillion. And that stands against $10 trillion that only goes to banks. So it's a ratio of about, what, 40 to 1. 40 to 1. Might be 50 to 1. Might be 30 to 1. But you get the idea. For every dollar that Obama delivers to the exhausted and set-upon population of the United States, he delivers $30 to $40 into the hands of the Wall Street parasites in the form of bailouts. And those bailouts, mark my words, are futile. You're in the middle of a collapsing bubble. Everything around you is now governed by the geometry, it's a nightmare geometry, of the pseudosphere, the negative curvature inside a collapsing bubble, where the angles of a triangle don't add up to 180 degrees. Everything is different. It is a bizarro universe in many ways. But that is what happens when you have a multi-decade casino economy, bubble economy, asset bubble, which has now been quite effectively popped, and it's now coming down. No force in the universe can maintain paper values under these conditions. The only thing you can try to do is to come out of it with people alive, infrastructure improved, and productive activity revived. And if you do it any other way, it begins to get very, very bad. We'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Crisis Radio, Webster Toffoli reporting from Washington, D.C. Obama, $10 trillion for the banks. $10 trillion for the jackals, parasites, hyenas, raptors, ticks, leeches of Wall Street, and stack that up against maybe a quarter trillion, $250 billion, if we're lucky, New Deal-style payments to people. And you can see what's going on. The idea with Obama is deception. You've got to think, first of all, about his method. And the method is now, I think, absolutely clear. With Bush, you were dealing with a brutal, crude reactionary, a thug. And he would come out and say these things, right? Bring it on, dead or alive, mission accomplished, crude, chauvinistic, militaristic slogans. Obama is a completely different approach. Obama, everything is based on deception, dissembling, duping the people. He's slimy, he's shifty, he's slippery. You can't pin him down. The positions change every day. The numbers go up and down according to the tracking polls and the focus groups. Everything is calculated. There's also a very sinister aspect of Obama, the psychological warfare, the deliberate psychological manipulation. People have talked about hypnosis, and I think there may be something to this. This deserves far greater attention than it's gotten so far. But you can see that Obama, we have a confession from an Obama bot in the course of the campaign last fall, a woman who had worked for Obama who basically said that the entire goal of the Obama campaign is to rob the American people of reason and free will. It's designed to make you think that your world is coming to an end, that the world is collapsing around you, and that Obama is irresistible and inevitable, and you better capitulate before it's too late. Right? This was a woman who talked about the manipulative techniques that were employed by Obama. Well, in this case, it's a very interesting combination. Obama goes, first of all, with rhetoric, right? Catastrophe, crisis, devastating, tragedy, whatever it is. All this hyper rhetoric of collapse, which is, in some ways, these terms are accurate, but Obama doesn't know that they're accurate. He's simply carrying out a strategy of rhetoric. So we've got, first of all, this constant barrage of not just malaise in the Carter tradition, but ultra malaise, right? Hypercritical malaise coming from Obama. And then the billions, the trillions. He's showering you with baskets full of zeros and attempting to disorient people, because people have become confused and bewildered and shocked between the catastrophe and the $2 trillion here and the $5 trillion there and the $1 trillion deficit and all the rest of this stuff. Obama then comes in with his programs. And as I say, the key to all of his programs is they contain an element of window dressing. Obama has learned from Carter. Carter came in and said, oh, I campaigned on jobs and employment, but I realized that inflation is really the problem. In other words, I've gone from the poor man's issue, the working man's issue, to the rich man's issue. Inflation is a problem for people who have money and want to keep it. Inflation is no problem for those of us who are heavily in debt. It actually tends to reduce the size of the debt burden if you have a certain degree of inflation. Carter came in and said, oh, we've got to fight inflation, because this is what Volcker and the people at the Federal Reserve had told him. So he did that turnaround, and then Carter began ranting and raving about something he never talked about in the campaign, the energy crisis. The energy crisis is real. The moral equivalent of war, said Carter. The malaise, energy policy, we're consuming too much. You're all a nation of over-consuming pigs. And Carter went with this in an unclever way. Obama has learned that you can't be Carter. You've got to have a foreground of window dressing and camouflage. The window dressing and camouflage for Obama, and these are also things that Democrats in the Congress would be demanding, were these things, the $40 billion for the unemployment benefits, the $20 billion for the food stamps, the $18 billion for a revival of child support, various things of this sort, and the very, very modest infrastructure budget, which we'll talk about in a little while. Obama puts these things up front. Obama does not primarily talk about his $1.5 trillion of Treasury money going to the banks or being sucked out of the economy and convoyed to the banks within the framework of a $10 trillion overall bailout. He doesn't talk about this. And he benefits from the fact that he's got a Pavlovian opposition. Rush Limbaugh, we'll have to talk about Rush Limbaugh in the course of this, right, has now emerged as the great antagonist of Obama. Obama is this is a cynical, psychological warfare operation to create a block universe of pessimism for the American people between the raving reactionary Limbaugh, who in the past couple of weeks has given his full support to the Austrian school. He loves von Hayek. Limbaugh claims to be a libertarian. People who profess libertarianism ought to really consider what they've gotten themselves into. Limbaugh is essentially identical to other exponents of the Austrian school. And his idea, of course, is that the Depression should be allowed to work its full fury on the American people. You shouldn't lift a finger to fight the Depression. So Obama, with that kind of opposition, Obama looks good. But for the American people, it means you're trapped between the reactionary, the raving right-wing radical, Limbaugh, and on the other side, what amounts to neo-fascism, a new version of the Mussolini fascist corporate state with Obama. Now, that is a choice you must reject. The answer to that one, is it Limbaugh or Obama, is a plague on both your houses, a plague on both your houses. So the question now is to develop the intellectual authority and the intellectual autonomy to say, no, we reject the horrors of the liquidationist school, because that's Limbaugh. He's back there with Andrew Mellon saying, liquidate stocks, liquidate bonds, liquidate labor, liquidate real estate, let everything collapse, have Schumpeter's creative destruction, and then you'll get a recovery. We reject that. How many people need to die in that process? How many generations need to be destroyed? That's abhorrent, abominable pessimism and quietism. I mean, it basically says, let's surrender to evil. Let's embrace evil. Let's frolic and wallow in evil. No. And on the other side, of course, Obama with this corporate state. And again, the main problem with Obama is not that he wants to put $20 billion into food stamps. That's the positive part. That's the window dressing. And we'll take it. And we want it multiplied by 10. But the problem with Obama is the $10 trillion for the banks. So that sets up, I think, the problem. Got to create a third way out of that.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Here in Washington, D.C. And again, let me stress, Obama, the banker's boy. Let's look at the speech of Barkey to the joint session of Congress, 24th of February, last week. We're recording the program today, the 6th of March. So this is now Barkey's equivalent of a State of the Union. Now, here's Barkey's analysis on the Depression. Credit has stopped flowing the way that it should. Too many bad loans from the housing crisis have made their way onto the books of too many banks. This is basically the right-wing explanation, you notice? With so much debt and so little confidence, these banks are now fearful of lending any more money to households. And this, of course, is bad. Now, Obama says he's got to address this. And what is he going to do? This is now the open door to bailouts. This plan of Obama's will require significant amounts of resources from the federal government, more than we've already set aside, more than the existing $700 billion of the TARP. But while the cost of action will be great, I can assure you that the cost of inaction will be far greater, for it could result in an economy that sputters along for months or years, perhaps a decade. That would be worse for our deficit, worse for business, worse for you, and worse for the next generation. I refuse to let that happen. Then he goes into some verbiage. This is what it's about. it's not about helping banks. It's about helping people. Oh, so the usual argument, exactly what we heard last fall. It's not a bailout for Wall Street. It only looks like $700 billion going into the pockets of the Wall Street pirates. It's really about helping people. It's about helping Main Street and the mom-and-pop stores. Of course, we've got to convoy the money through Count Dracula, right, through the zombie banks so that they will lend it. Well, of course, the point is zombie banks don't lend. Zombie banks sit there and speculate. They try to drive up the price of gasoline, but they certainly don't create new planted equipment for a broad-based recovery. So, but this is Barkey now. It's not about helping banks. It's about helping people. Because when credit is available again, that young family can finally buy a new home, and some company will hire workers to build it. And then those workers will have money to spend, and they can get a loan too. Maybe they'll finally buy that car or open their own business. Investors will return to the market, and American families will see their retirement secured once more. Too bad if you lost your 401k and IRA in the meantime. Slowly but surely, confidence will return and our economy will recover. So, says Barkey, I ask this Congress to join me in doing whatever proves necessary. Mark those words. That is Barkey's creed. That is his pledge of fealty and feudal loyalty to the Wall Street financier oligarchs who have made him. To Soros, to Rockefeller, to Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and the rest of them. And to Bullet Bob Rubin, don't forget him, whose stock has now reached approximately $1 per share in the bankrupt, ravaged hulk of Citicorp. Barkey says, I ask this Congress to join me in doing whatever proves necessary for the banks. Notice there's nothing about that like that for anything industrial. If you're an auto worker on an auto assembly line in Detroit, he doesn't say, I'll do whatever is necessary for you. No. He does this for financier oligarchs, bankers, the ruling class of this society who own him. That is now the issue. Don't ever forget Barkey's creed announced in his 24th of February 2009 speech to a joint session of Congress where he pledged an open-ended commitment to save the banking system at all costs. Now, the problem with this is it's metaphysically impossible. These things cannot be saved. They are indeed ravaged hulks. They are zombie banks. They do not lend. They absorb resources. They have no useful social function. They do not create jobs. They don't even create parasitical jobs anymore. They're laying off people. They exist through proprietary trading speculation, which should be shut down. They exist through gouging you on fees, late fees. Happen to have a savings account in the Bank of America a couple of years ago. The Bank of America takes $5 per month out of your savings account as a fee. It used to be that you'd get interest payments compounded and credited quarterly on a savings account. Well, no, Bank of America pays no interest. What they pay is they want you to pay them $5 for the privilege of having a savings account if it's not enough money in it to make it worth their while. So they gouge you on that. And, of course, derivatives. All the banks are derivatives monster. The derivatives monster and the zombie bank are essentially interchangeable terms. Now, let's throw out the big event of the latter part of this week, which I throw out there to confound Obama and to confound Limbaugh and the reactionary right-wingers of the Austrian school. And this, of course, is AIG. The reason that AIG is so interesting is the following. The theory of the Depression, embraced by Limbaugh in one way, and really not that much different from Barkey, is that the Depression started with poor people. We've got a world banking crisis, right, from Iceland to Ukraine to Hungary to Hong Kong and all around the world. There's a banking crisis. Who caused this? Was it the bankers? No. It was poor people. It was those poor schmoes, wretches who wanted to put a roof over their heads, some shabby slum property. They got a subprime mortgage at some exorbitant adjustable rate coming up with the high interest and so forth and points and closing costs and all the rest of this. And then when they couldn't pay, that brought down the world banking system. It's so fantastic. It's just beyond belief. Lucky the communists never figured this out, right? That would have been great for Lenin and Stalin to bring down capitalism and cause the revolution. No. Dear Limbaugh, dear Barkey, your agreed-on theory of the Depression is a fraud. The Depression starts with deindustrialization under Volcker, who is now sitting in the White House once again, presiding over the Recovery Committee. How ironic. Volcker and Goolsbee the Ghoul. So we've got the austerity hyenas in the White House, right? The austerity ghouls in the White House. But the Depression starts with deindustrialization and then with derivatives. Derivatives being the leading form of fictitious capital in our time. Every depression, every panic crash starts with an inflated bubble of overinflated, hypertrophied asset values, fictitious capital. Property titles that have been created outside of production, without reference to production, indeed often in contradiction to production. The whole business of regulation is to try to obviate that, to try to keep that as low as you possibly can. Can't be done all the time, but it can generally be done enough to avoid panic crashes and world depressions. What we've just had is the bacchanalian orgy of the derivatives, and they have reached $1.5 quadrillion. Now, if you listen to Limbaugh, there's no such thing as a derivative. If you listen to Barkey, there's no such thing as a derivative. Those of us who know about derivatives and who know that this is the root cause of the bubble, the casino economy, and therefore of the present collapse and indeed disintegration of these institutions, you've got to talk about derivatives. You've got to stick derivatives into the faces of people who are trying to tell you what is the cause of this depression. And the reason is very practical. Unless and until you wipe out derivatives, cancel them, abrogate them, shred them, delete them, burn them, use them for wallpaper, you don't get out of the depression. You've got to remove that cancerous mass of fictitious capital represented by the derivatives. They have no social utility. Now, this is why AIG is such an interesting case. AIG is not a subprime mortgage company. It's not. They are an insurance company, and their crash is based on derivatives. Derivatives, derivatives, derivatives. Back in a minute. To World Crisis Radio, your host, Webster Tupper, here in Washington, D.C., calling your attention once again to the second edition now of Surviving the Cataclysm. Order it right now from ProgressivePress.com, www.progressivepress.com. Click on the link and order it. You get an electronic copy now and the paper copy in a month or so when it's ready. We're rushing to get the second edition out in the teeth of this world economic disintegration, not a collapse, beyond collapse, into disintegration, and it's far from over. The main events are still ahead. The worldwide dollar panic, the rush for the exits, and, of course, the comprehensive banking panic also ahead. But let's return to this issue of AIG. AIG is a problem for the hegemonic explanation of the depression, because it's not a mortgage company. It's not engaged in subprime lending in any form. It is a company destroyed purely and simply by derivatives, and derivatives in the pure state. In other words, derivatives not in the form of mortgage-backed derivatives, asset-backed securities, mortgage-backed securities, but derivatives in the form of credit default swaps and collateralized debt obligations, CDS and CDO. Those are derivatives. So this is the problem with AIG, and it's, again, it confutes and refutes. It's a complete repudiation of the crazy Limbaugh theory that poor people did it, which, as we've heard, is basically accepted by Barkey as well. He thinks it's the same thing. Barkey, in his inaugural address had a chance to do what Roosevelt did, which was to say the money changers have been driven from their high seats in the temple by their stubbornness and incompetence. In other words, what Roosevelt did in 1933 was to say Wall Street created the crisis. Obama didn't do that at all. Obama said, we, all of us, we as a society, we communitarians out here, we all avoided the unpleasant choices and the difficult choices. So Obama thinks that the American people share responsibility for the depression because I guess he thinks they're greedy, right? And, of course, that's the weatherman theory. What would you expect with a weatherman in the White House, a friend of Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn, of that old bankrupt racist weatherman tendency? Anyway, let's look at AIG. AIG came up twice this week, well, more than twice, but two times, I think, of particular interest. One was hearings around midweek of the Senate Budget Committee, chaired by Senator Wyden of Oregon, testimony from helicopter Ben Bernanke, the boss of the Federal Reserve System, or at least the spokesman for the New York Federal Reserve Bank, I guess is a better way to describe him. So helicopter Ben, academic ideologue but thoroughly evil, comes forward and talks about how angry he is that AIG got all that money. He was so angry that AIG did that. And why? Of course, it's not even a bank. It's not a depository institution. It turns out this week that AIG has already received $160 billion from the U.S. government, and this is including the TARP. And they're going to get $30 billion more. That takes us up to about $190 billion for AIG, for one company. And it's estimated that they're going to demand another $200 billion. So we're going to get up to $400 billion, practically half a trillion, to bail out AIG. Why? What is the point? There was a question then of the money given so far to AIG. Can we taxpayers please know who got it? No, said Helicopter Ben. That would be a terrible mistake. We've got to remain secret. We've got to have complete secrecy about who got the money given to AIG. In other words, after AIG got the money, who did they give it to? Because that would undermine confidence in the market. Confidence in the market. Helicopter Ben, it's too late. The horse is out of the barn. There is no confidence in AIG. It's a penny stock. It's worth 38 cents a share. You can forget it. That's after the feds put in $160 billion. It's worth 38 cents a share. And it's a penny stock. And in the market in general, you can look at the other insurance companies, and we will if we have time. You can look at MetLife, the Hartford Prudential, and so forth, and see how they're crashing down. A couple of big British insurance companies, Aviva, crashing down today. Those are quite large. That's very, very ominous. The reason for this, of course, is that these insurance companies are all loaded with derivatives. Derivatives, derivatives, derivatives. Not subprime mortgages, but derivatives. And AIG. Helicopter Ben is angry. Well, a couple of days later, we had hearings at the Senate Banking Committee, now featuring Donald Cohn, K-O-H-N, who is he's the deputy of Helicopter Ben. He's Helicopter Ben's assistant at the Federal Reserve. And there were also some other people, some state regulators. In particular, we have Eric DiNallo, who is the New York State Insurance Commission supervisor, right? He's the New York State Insurance Commission head. And he's the regulator for AIG to the extent that it exists as an insurance company based in the state of New York. Now, here's the issue. Every time you get these ruling class figures talking about derivatives, they don't mention the word derivatives. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. We can look at the history of taboos. The history of taboos is a very interesting study in its own right. In the Victorian period, right, there were all these taboos about body parts and all the rest of this stuff, right? Scatological references are generally taboo in polite society. Okay. More recently, under political correctness, various ethnic epithets have become absolutely taboo. They're not appropriate, and they're condemned by this new doctrine of political correctness. Now, the biggest obscenity now is not anything that the Victorians would have recognized or even the politically correct. It's the word derivatives. You're not allowed to say derivatives. Derivatives became known to people in general around 1997, 1998, during the Asian contagion crisis, which peaked then in the Russian GKO state bankruptcy and the blow-up of long-term capital management of Greenwich, Connecticut, using the Black-Scholes model. They blew a hole of $4 to $5 billion in the world banking system, and they were bailed out very quickly by Greenspan with a backdoor crony capitalist bailout, another crime of Greenspan at that time. But they were dealing in derivatives. Derivatives are not for hedging. They're not to manage risk. They are to take risk. And this is what emerged. We were told by Bernanke in the Wyden Committee that AIG was an insurance company, but it chose to create a hedge fund of its own in London, a hedge fund. A hedge fund means a speculative company that has so few participants and people who put money into it that it flies below the very weak radar of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And, of course, by putting it in London, you get even less regulation because the British have a regulatory regime which is the scandal and joke and obscenity of the world. And we had Gordon Brown here this week telling us how great the British system was and how we should have free trade like the British. No thanks, Gordy. Not in the land of the New Deal. We've got a few things going that the British do not have. Gordon Brown, of course, also pioneered this idea of bailouts to banks. So AIG created AIG Financial Products and put that in London. Now, again, when you listen to these hearings, when they say toxic assets, that means derivatives. When they say financial instruments, that means derivatives. When they say complex transactions, that means derivatives. All of these euphemisms for derivatives come down to the fact that they don't want you to understand that what has gone on here is a swindle conducted exclusively by bankers. Responsibility for the Depression goes into the hands of the bankers, primarily, and of the government bureaucrats who deregulated to free the criminal energy of the bankers in the direction of derivatives. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio for our second hour today. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C., and right the 6th of March, and we've got the lowest stock market since 1995-96, and the highest unemployment since the first Volcker era, that is to say about 1982-1983. In other words, Ronnie Reagan administering the public relations for Volcker, running the government from the Federal Reserve. Let me, before we get back to AIG and why this is so instructive and the call to mobilization also has to be issued, let me just remind you now, Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide through the greatest financial crisis in human history. First edition, 1999. First copies went out about 10 years ago. And now, brought up to date, second edition. And the paper edition will be ready now within a few weeks. So go to www.progressivepress.com and order a copy. An overview of the contents. Chapter 1, The Oncoming Cataclysm. In other words, the crisis we're in right now and how you could see that coming back in the period of the Russian state bankruptcy, Asian contagion, long-term capital management above all. You could see the potential of derivatives to bring down the entire system. But Rubin and Greenspan insisted on the full fury of the derivatives, full deregulation of derivatives. So deregulation dug the grave, and then the lunatic bankers and hedge fund operators of Wall Street came along. The Oncoming Cataclysm, Derivatives Madness. Chapter 2, The Main Cause. the multi-trillion-dollar mutual fund gamble. Why mutual funds are not a good thing. The descent into the maelstrom. That is the history of the global financial system since 1944. The immiseration of America, the destruction of the U.S. standard of living. It was actually half when this book came out, minus 50%. Right now it's minus 60 to 65% after, in particular, the Bush era. Models of collapse. Well, that would be something like the crash of 1929. That's really rather superficial. Models of disintegration. Germany, 1923. The British default on gold, 1931, followed then by other disintegrations. And now today, this is a disintegration. It is the disintegration of the world financial system and banking system, whatever it was, however beaten up it was, it is now disintegrating. Usury and natural law. Why you cannot have an economy run on the basis of a bubble. And usury and high interest rates. The age of oligarchy. That's what we've been living through. That's why the government responds the way it does. That's the key to the Barkey candidacy in particular. This is oligarchy. Oligarchy runs the system. The American system, chapter 10. The American system is what you need. Not the Austrians, not the Chicago boys, not the Keynesians, not the Malthusians, none of those British And indeed, Venetian systems will do it. It's going to take the American system, Alexander Hamilton, Friedrich List, Henry Clay, populists, New Deal, Kennedy. That's the American system. That's what it means to be a traditionalist. Self-defense in the crisis. How do you survive as an individual? And world economic recovery. How you organize a recovery of the world out of a bottomless depression. Now, bottomless depression brings us back to AIG. As I said before, the interesting thing about this is we have the kabuki dance of the derivatives, which consists of ruling class spokesmen bending over backwards in every way possible to talk about toxic assets, complex instruments, exotic financial tools, exotic financial products, complex products, financial products. All of that means derivatives, and they don't want to say derivatives because that would essentially give a class content, the reality-based one, to the thing that's being explained. The class analysis of this depression is that it was created by bankers, not created by poor people. That's also God's honest truth, which you get to most readily by looking at it from the point of view of the different groups in the society and remembering that the oligarchy is what runs society, in particular the financier cliques of Wall Street. So in the middle of all this, we get a lot of posturing from the senators. But then we get the speech of Eric DiNallo, the New York State Insurance Commissioner. Now, don't get me wrong. This guy's not good. He's there to argue that AIG should get their money. So don't have any illusions about that. But he then goes through, how did AIG get blown up? He says, I didn't do it, says DiNallo. The insurance business is not what did it. The crisis for AIG did not come from its state-regulated insurance companies, DiNallo says. The primary source of the problem was AIG Financial Products in London, deregulated, and derivatives. The primary source from the problem was AIG Financial Products, which had written credit default swaps, derivatives, and futures with a notional value of about $2.7 trillion, including about $440 billion of credit default swaps. Now, a couple of things wrong with this. Credit default swaps are derivatives. Futures are derivatives. Options are derivatives. They're all derivatives. So what he means to say is AIG Financial Products had issued, underwritten, derivatives, including credit default swaps, futures, and other things, with a notional value of $2.7 trillion. In other words, the value of the assets pledged in the deals is $2.7 trillion, and he says $440 billion of credit default swaps. There are other estimates that are higher. And he points out, for context, this $2.7 trillion, with a T, is equal to the gross national product of France. Losses on certain credit default swaps and collateral calls by global banks, broker-dealers, and hedge funds that are counterparties to these credit default swaps are the main source of AIG's problems. That's, of course, another one. Whenever they talk about counterparties, that means derivatives are involved. Now, isn't this interesting? AIG, and we've seen this, I've reported in the past, about a three-part series here in the Washington Post about AIG. It essentially starts with issuing credit default swaps, which are sort of do-it-yourself insurance policies issued by one bank or financial institution or insurance company to another. And then they pyramided, it looks like, credit collateralized debt obligations on top of the credit default swap. So they create a financial pyramid, a pyramid of derivatives. As long as the leverage, the cash flow at the bottom into this pyramid is positive, then the profits at the top are astronomical. But, unfortunately, given the workings of leverage, when you go into reverse leverage and the losses begin to multiply at the base of the pyramid, then the losses at the top are exponentially multiplied. That is how AIG was able to lose $62 billion in the fourth quarter of last year. And that is what everybody's screaming about now. These senators who gave carte blanche to Wall Street in the form of the TARP, the bailouts, are now screaming, wait a minute, we were told by Paulson that this would stop the bleeding, and now we get a $62 billion loss. The interesting problem here is, how can you get $62 billion in losses? Well, the one way you can do it is derivatives that have gone into reverse leverage, and that is the reality. So look there at AIG, $2.7 trillion. The entire AIG crisis was created by two things, as we see. A hedge fund in London issuing derivatives. Those are both things that ought to be illegal. Ban them. Make them federal crimes. No more hedge funds. Wipe them out. Shut them down. Send in the U.S. Marshals. Get rid of them. Send in the T-Men. No more hedge funds. The hedge fund is simply something that if you regulate it, it stops being a hedge fund. So you can do it that way, too. And no more derivatives. Wipe out derivatives.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Attention to the new second edition of Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide to the worst financial crisis in human history. I have to say, modesty aside, a prophetic book, 1999 first edition, talking about a depression, a world economic depression of fantastic proportions due to deindustrialization under Volcker, the destruction of the U.S. standard of living, deregulation, derivatives, hedge funds, the casino economy, the bubble economy. There was even a guy writing by the name of Ethan Capstein in Foreign Affairs back in 1998, who said that the system had become shockproof, that the architecture of derivatives had made the system shockproof, said Capstein back in 1998 in the pages of Foreign Affairs, and that's all in the book. Didn't turn out that way, did it? And now you've got the most harrowing crisis in world history, and the most valuable form of knowledge you can have, absolute question of life or death, is do you know how to get out of a depression? Not how to stand around saying, I want the free market and let the depression do its work, and then we'll have a recovery, right? How many mega deaths later? But how do you get out of a depression? How do you fight your way out of a depression using investment, technology, full employment, and essentially the methods of the New Deal experience, because that's what it is. Not all of them, but the ones that worked. So that's Surviving the Cataclysm. Order it right now from www.progressivepress.com. Com. Now, concerning AIG, $2.7 trillion of derivatives through a hedge fund. Both of those things should have been illegal. And this is where our dear Austrians and Chicago boys have gotten us into trouble. They said, oh, deregulate everything, let the market work. Well, the market brought you hedge funds and derivatives, and that is what has now destroyed your retirement and your life. We're losing jobs at the rate of 600,000 to 700,000 jobs per month. And there is no bottom. There is no automatic recovery from a depression of these proportions. In the 1930s, 1940s, it required the New Deal, Lend-Lease, and Bretton Woods. That's what ended the depression. And unless and until you get things like that, you're not getting out of it. So that's what's in the book. How do you do that? Also, how do you survive as an individual in the meantime? But let's continue with this, the money that went to AIG. Here's the, now the problem. The issue comes up in the course of these hearings in front of the Dodd-Shelby committee of the Senate, with Helicopter Ben having testified the day before, but DiNallo is there, and Cohn. Donald L. Cohn, K-O-H-N. Make a note. Donald L. Cohn, the vice chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, Washington, D.C. His address: Federal Reserve System, 20551. Federal Reserve System, Washington, D.C., 20551. He won't give you his email, but you can send him a note. Donald L. Cohn, K-O-H-N. And he was asked by Dodd and Shelby, well, who are the people who got the money from AIG? Who has gotten the $160 to $190 billion so far? And Cohn says, oh, my God. Oh, heavens to Betsy. I can't tell you that. That would destabilize the markets. That would cause a taint of opprobrium. It would stigmatize these wonderful bankers who have stepped forward to take that money with their wonderful public-spirited, civic-minded willingness to take the taxpayer money and jettisoning their they gave up their free market principles to do it too. They are free marketeers. We want you to know when it comes to privatizing profits, but when it comes to socializing losses, somehow the free market principles don't seem to mean so much to these wonderful bankers, do they? Well, Donald L. Cohn, and of course Dodd has to say, that's totally unacceptable. And Shelby is an interesting case because he represents those southern low-wage sweatshop owners down there in the deep south. And as bad as those guys are, they have this wonderful feature that they don't want to pay for Wall Street. They don't want to pay for anything. They don't want to pay for their workers. They don't want to pay for a social safety net. They sure don't want to pay for Wall Street. So Shelby actually becomes an interesting voice on this. They want to know who got the money, and we want to know who got the money. And this is what I urge people to do, and I invite libertarians to join in this too. If you hate the Federal Reserve, and everybody should hate the Federal Reserve, there's no doubt about that, you want to do some problem making for the Federal Reserve, make yourself a letter, send one copy to Senator Dodd at the Senate and to Senator Shelby, U.S. Senate in Washington, D.C., and send a copy to Donald L. Cohn, Federal Reserve System, Washington, D.C., 20551. We want derivatives banned, and in the meantime, we want to know who got the money from AIG. Now, why is this interesting? It is assumed, there was an interesting program on Thursday night, that is to say on the evening of Thursday, the 5th of March, To the Point with Warren Olney. You can get this, I think you can get a pod of that on the Internet, interviewing various people about AIG. Who got that money? Well, it's not a complete mystery. I mean, we don't know exactly who, but there are rumors. We heard things. So the rumors are that it's above all European banks, foreign banks. The U.S. taxpayer coughed up $160 billion for the Eurocrats and the Eurogarks. The finance oligarchs of the Euroland zone have gotten your money, $160 billion, thanks to the Federal Reserve, Bush, Paulson, Bernanke, and now Geithner and Summers and Volcker and Barkey. So there's a ruling class consensus that AIG had to be saved. And Donald Del Cone is, he's just indignant that there might be an exposure of the people who took this money because they had a wonderful presumption of confidentiality. So it's people like, you know, undoubtedly the Bank of England, the Royal Bank of Scotland, Societe Generale, Banco Santander, Deutsche Bank, you name it, right? All these Eurocrats and Eurogarchs with their banks got the money. But sitting in the middle of that group of European banks, Goldman Sachs. Oh, Goldman Sachs. Now, you can go back to John Galbraith's The Great Crash. You can see the key role of Goldman Sachs with their, at that time, new mutual funds, the Shenandoah Fund and other funds in the crash of 1929. Goldman Sachs was a key part of the crash of 1929. Goldman Sachs is probably, out of all the entities that bid up the price of gasoline to $4.50 a gallon last summer, Goldman Sachs is probably number one of all the speculators who drove up the price of gas at your expense. And Goldman Sachs, out of all these financial institutions, their stock price has held up the best. Citibank is now sitting at about a dollar a share. It's about to become a penny stock. AIG has long since become a penny stock. J.P. Morgan Chase is now down in the 20s. But Goldman Sachs is hanging on because they've got Paulson and the rest of this clique and Rubin supporting them, and they used AIG money to make sure that Goldman Sachs didn't take a haircut on AIG derivatives. We've got to get to the bottom of this.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C., calling your attention once again to Obama the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate. All of that is coming true. Get that from Amazon.com. Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. Biography is destiny. You put a weatherman in the White House, his fury, his hatred of the American working class is expressed in his austerity policies. We'll get to that. The two summits, the Fiscal Responsibility Summit, the meeting of the austerity ghouls and budget hawks in the White House 2 weeks ago. Then this week, the healthcare summit. They want to gouge your Medicare. They want to balance the budget on the backs of the sick and the old. This is worse than Herbert Hoover. All of that pretty much foreshadowed in these two books, Obama the Postmodern Coup, Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. Get both of those at Amazon.com. And now they're joined by a third in the recent 12-month period, which is the second edition of Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide to the worst financial crisis in human history. To know the causes, to understand what's going on around you, to be able to survive personally, and above all, to have a strategy to get the world out of the worst economic depression in human history, because that's what it is. That's not just Barkey's rhetoric. He happens to have that for contingent reasons, but this is exactly what it is. He's doing it to flim-flam you, but you've got to face the fact. The right-wing opposition to Barkey, the problem with them is if they get rid of Barkey, you're left with the depression. So you get rid of Barkey, that's fine, but then you've got the depression. A New Deal opposition to Barkey will get rid of both Barkey and the Depression, and that is what we need. And I think the publication of Surviving the Cataclysm in the second edition, the first time it's ever been available on paper, is a step in that direction at least. So www.progressivepress.com, www.progressivepress.com, get your copy of Surviving the Cataclysm. This has become available just in this past week. So the thing with AIG, to wrap this up, AIG, $160 to $190 billion U.S. taxpayer dollars already, $200 billion more on the way. The spokespersons for the financial oligarchy say this is a rational workout and unwinding of the AIG derivatives book, because that's what it is. Credit default swaps collateralized debt obligations, futures, and other derivatives are the issue. Who got that money? European banks, foreign banks, Eurocrats, Eurogarchs got that money, your money. And Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, who had spent the summer of 2008 gouging you at the gas pump, you were probably paying about a dollar a gallon just to Goldman Sachs alone. Pure Goldman Sachs. $1 Goldman Sachs tax, thanks to Paulson. Paulson is now in the area of criminal prosecution. He had conflicts of interest. He was sitting on a pile, we assume, of options from Goldman Sachs, other interests, crony interests, his pals, his friends, his social circle. He's a leading environmentalist, of course, you should know. He's very concerned about the polar bears and the snail darters. He gets left cover by helping the polar bears so that he can crucify your children and deprive you of your economic future. So we want to know who got the money, and we want to know from Senator Dodd at the Senate Banking Committee. Now, obviously, he's a tool of the banking community, but he's also got to get reelected. And Senator Shelby, who is a tool of those wonderful low-wage sweatshop employers down there in Alabama, I guess it is, and they don't want to pay for Wall Street. Well, that's fine. Let's play the low-wage sweatshop employers of Alabama against the Wall Street financier oligarchs. We'll play a lesser or less powerful evil against a much more powerful one, and maybe we can extract the names of who got the AIG money. The reason for this is it is important. We've got to educate the population that the center of the crisis is derivatives, 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 collateralized debt obligations, credit default swaps, structured investment vehicles, mortgage-backed securities, asset-backed securities, auction-rate securities, anything with an option in it, anything with a future in it. Go to the Derivatives Dictionary, very interesting thing online, or, better yet, look at the Derivatives Madness chapter of Surviving the Cataclysm, which details a vast array of options, derivatives, over-the-counter derivatives, designer derivatives, structured notes, you name it, exchange-traded derivatives, all different kinds. All of them have to be banned. It's very simple. Ban them. Outlaw them. They were outlawed from 1936 until 1982. They were of dubious legality from 1986 to 1993. Put them back into the outer darkness of total illegality. And again, you're just going to have to send them to the shredder. There's nothing you can do about this. They've got to be deleted. Now, let's use the remaining time here today to, oh, one last thing, of course. Where does these credit default swaps come from? According to Internet gleanings this week, the credit default swap was invented in the bowels of J.P. Morgan Chase in 1995 by a certain financier oligarch named Blythe Masters. He was a Blythe spirit. Blythe Masters, B-L-Y-T-H-E, Masters, invented the credit default swap in the J.P. Morgan bureaucracy, 1995. Well, human civilization did pretty well without credit default swaps. We had this interesting exchange in the Bernanke testimony. He was asked by Senator Warner of Virginia. Now, this is not the old Mr. Elizabeth Taylor aging sensualist, Senator Warner, the old guy. This is now the new Senator Warner, an austerity Democrat, former governor of Virginia. And they go through this usual stuff. Warner says to Bernanke in his testimony, why, these new products, derivatives, he says, these new products were supposed to help price the risk and distribute the risk. These exotic financial products, but have had the opposite effect, haven't they? And Warner then goes on to say, should we now regulate these products, derivatives, should we regulate these products, is transparency enough, or... He says, it actually answers an interesting question. Is there a societal value for these instruments, derivatives? Is there a societal value for these instruments? Do we need, asks Warner of Bernanke, a bright line prohibition? A bright line prohibition? And, of course, the answer is, yeah, you do, on all of them. Get rid of them. And not just prospectively, but retrospectively. In other words, ex post facto, wipe out derivatives. Sorry about that. Otherwise, civilization is doomed. Do we need international regulatory oversight? Interestingly enough, Helicopter Ben Bernanke then says, there are some cases where products should be prohibited if they're too complex or too much risk for the system. Two possibilities. Either the products, derivatives, are too complex for the system or too much risk for the system, says Helicopter Ben. Now, that indicates that even in the ruling class, the defenses are not as strong as they might be against the idea of wiping out derivatives, at least going forward. Now, we want something much, much more vast. But I urge people to talk about this and to mobilize on it. And again, Donald L. Cohn, K-O-H-N, Federal Reserve System, Washington, D.C., 20551, needs to know that you want to hear who got the AIG money. Goldman Sachs? Was it the Bank of England? Was it Société Générale of France, of Belgium? Was it Deutsche Bank? Who got the money? Was it somebody in Poland or Hungary? We want to know.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
To World Crisis Radio, your host Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. And let's just use our final segment. Let's try to go through some relevant news items of the week. In terms of Barkey's policy of deception, he went to the Department of Transportation this week, and there we find the Republican reactionary Ray LaHood, who presided over Clinton's impeachment 10 years ago. So with LaHood and Biden standing there, Barkey says, oh, we're America. When we get into a crisis, we build our way out of it. We have the Transcontinental Railroad, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Rural Electrification Administration, and the Hoover Dam. And now we're going to have a 21st century infrastructure. Sounds good. Sounds like some stuff that I was saying a little while ago, right? That the great projects are sponsored by government, from the Erie Canal to the Transcontinental Railroad to NASA, the Moonshot, to DARPA and the Internet. It all comes out of government. There's no way around it. But look a little bit deeper. Don't just go for the cape. Look at the Matador. The Matador is standing there saying, I'm in the great tradition of the Transcontinental Railroad, the Golden Gate Bridge, the TVA, and the Hoover Dam. And what are you offering, Barkey? $45 billion he's got. $28 billion for highway construction. It's a pittance. It's a drop in the bucket. $9 billion for rail. It's a joke. $8 billion for mass transit. It's nothing. It's peanuts. It's chicken feed. And he's not able to say one project that would get a name. He's going to rebuild a lot of bridges. I'm all for it. But you've got to remember, what's the size of the problem? As we look into surviving the cataclysm, we find the very interesting chapter on the immiseration of the United States. And we find that we are sporting a deficit in infrastructure, which is multi-trillion. It's $3 to $4 trillion, and undoubtedly more now, right? The effect of things like bridges in Minnesota falling down, or bridges on the various throughways of New England recently falling down. He's calling $28 billion in highways a 21st century infrastructure. Again, this is a bad joke. Here's a guy who's giving $10 trillion to the banks, and he's got less than $50 billion for infrastructure. If you throw in the item for the Army Corps of Engineers, meaning the locks, the ports, the canals, and related stuff, you get up to about 50 billion in Barkey's budget and stimulus combined. This is ridiculous. It's a bad joke. So there's the idea, right? You're preening and strutting with the Transcontinental Railroad and the Golden Gate Bridge, and what you're delivering is a lousy $50 billion of depreciated dollars. Notice, in this past week, the hope of the Wall Street speculators in the commodities markets was not Barkey's reconstruction, not Barkey's recovery or stimulus program. It was the Chinese one, because the Chinese recovery program is based on actual physical commodity production, which is sucking up steel, copper, cement, lumber, and other things off the world market. That's a real recovery program. They're not pouring $10 trillion into the rat hole of valueless derivatives, right? They're not spending $10 trillion on financial aids. So there's one. Now, food stamps. I know some of our Austrians think that food stamps are the nanny state and they're highly objectionable. Well, we've now got 10% of the U.S. population. It's 31.8 million people on food stamps. It's about 10% of the U.S. population, actually a little bit more. It's an all-time record on food stamps. The SNAP program, Emergency Nutritional Assistance for the American People. If you're an individual on food stamps right now, you get $115 of coupons per month. Try living on that. If you're a family, a household, $255 of coupons. Now, under the stimulus, this has gone up by 13%. It's a $20 billion increase. $20 billion for food stamps. The bankers got $10 trillion 50 times. So for every dollar we're putting, it's 500 times on food stamps, the bankers are getting $500. Now, if you're in Texas, there were 3 million people in Texas on food stamps. In Michigan, it's I think it's 1 out of 8, 1/8, and that's probably obsolete. It's probably more like 1 out of 6 in Michigan. Now, again, I challenge our Austrians. What should happen to food stamps, dear Austrians? Should they be abolished? What do you think is going to happen to those people? How many do you think are going to starve? How many will die? You want to be responsible for that in the name of the free market that never was on land or sea, that has not existed for the last 10,000 years? Show me a free market. Show me anywhere in the world there's been one, anytime in the last 200 years. And don't tell me under the Founding Fathers, because the Founding Fathers means Hamilton, and that's no free market, let me tell you. And whenever Jefferson got a hold of the government with his various measures, he couldn't govern according to that either. I mean, look at Jefferson, the embargo, ogrodny, the biggest interference in the free market, which never was, that you could ever imagine. So the food stamp program is absolutely essential, and it has to be geared up. Now, GE is now approaching collapse. What do you do about GE? Simple. The problem in GE is, guess what? Derivatives. Derivatives in the form of GE Capital. It's an industrial corporation, or the ruins of what was an industrial corporation with a glorious history of people like Edison and Stanley and other important inventors and people who advanced the cause of human civilization. This is now going down because of GE Capital. That's a hedge fund. It's just like AIG. AIG was an insurance company with a hedge fund attached. GE, an industrial corporation with a hedge fund attached. What did the hedge fund do? GE Capital, derivatives. If you want to save GE, you've got to separate out the hedge fund, ban the hedge fund, wipe it out, ban the derivatives, ban the adjustable rate mortgages, re-regulate those markets, but get GE Capital separated out, shut it down, put it into Chapter 7, right, liquidation, and you could then rebuild GE, but you've got to get rid of Immelt. Immelt is the boss of GE, and of course he's used this. This is the MSNBC and NBC and the rest of this stuff. Immelt is, of course, an incompetent. He's a Wall Street stock jobber. Get him out of there. Get an industrial engineer or a scientist or somebody with some knowledge and get rid of these Wall Street influences. So GE can be saved. General Motors is also approaching bankruptcy once again. Those are companies that ought to be nationalized. You want to call it socialism? Who cares? The main thing is that production must continue. And if the private sector is incapable because of their bungling incompetence, their greed, and their stupidity, then we've got to have the nationalization of these companies. Now, the other interesting thing, the food stamps are a New Deal, they're a Great Society program from the Johnson era. From the New Deal, we have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation under Sheila Bair. Now, Sheila Bair is an absolute incompetent. She should, this Friday, meaning today, seize J.P. Morgan Chase, which has officially, on her books, $88 trillion of derivatives, Bank of America with $39 trillion of derivatives, Citibank with $36 trillion of derivatives, Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, $4 trillion of derivatives, Wells Fargo Wachovia with $6 trillion of derivatives, Bank of New York Mellon, $1.2 trillion of derivatives. Remember, the whole U.S. gross national product is $15 trillion, so J.P. Morgan alone has four times, officially, the U.S. gross national product. She says that the FDIC will soon run out of money, so she's increasing the premiums paid by the banks. Got to find another way to finance that. Don't let the FDIC go down. Don't let Sheila Bair make it into the Federal Derivatives Insurance Corporation. Keep it for deposits. Wipe out derivatives. So campaign against derivatives. Get rid of them. Shred them. Delete them. And to learn how, get Surviving the Cataclysm from www.progressivepress.com. And we'll see you next week.